Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Hey, it's Latif from Radiolab. Our goal with each episode is to make you think, how did I live this long and not know that? Radiolab, adventures on the edge of what we think we know. Listen wherever you get podcasts.
It's the Brian Lehrer Show on WNYC. Hi, everybody. It's great to be back. Thanks to David Cruz and Anna Sale for filling in last week while I was off with my family on New York City Public Schools spring break, binging on baseball and nature in Florida. Now, if you're ever in the Clearwater Dunedin area, take the naturalist hike on the protected beach of Honeymoon Island State Park, and you'll hear some great descriptions of coastal ecology and the politics of Florida real estate to boot, all of which actually has resonance for how we treat our shorelands here after Sandy. You can really see the gradual nature of wetlands, for example, unlike the water coming right up to the concrete, and that's part of the debate that we're having here. So that's just one example of what we did when I settled back in. I'll post some other thoughts, including comparisons of some spring training baseball stadiums on our webpage, but give me a few hours or a few days to get back in the groove for that. Meanwhile, happy Easter, one day late. Happy last day of Passover on the way in. Happy opening day, a national holiday in my book. Two major league teams opening in New York on the same day for the first time since 1956, when it was the Dodgers and the Giants. And baseball fans, did you see that Harry Reid quote in the Times today? From when he was dedicating a shooting range in Las Vegas with Wayne LaPierre from the NRA at his side in 2010, a shooting range subsidized with tax dollars. And he said, quote, people who criticize this would probably criticize baseball. It sounds like an April Fool's gag, right? But I assume it's real on the front page of the New York Times for this opening day of the baseball season. So let's talk to New York Times national correspondent Jackie Combs for some Monday morning politics. Hi, Jackie. Welcome back to WNYC.
Good morning, and thank you. That was a great segue to the subject of gun control, I guess.
I hope. And I realize that wasn't your story, but did you ever know about that Harry Reid quote before? At a shooting range, saying people who criticize this would probably criticize baseball?
No, it probably didn't get much attention at the time. It was taken from a video of him that's on the internet of that dedication of that shooting range. But it wouldn't have gotten much attention at the time because that was pretty par for the course, people saying things, you know, especially Democrats from Western states like that, saying very, you know, saying friendly things, being friendly with the NRA.
And whether or not from a cultural standpoint we consider guns like mom and apple pie, any idea how Congress would wind up funding a shooting range in Las Vegas? How does that become a legitimate use of tax dollars in Harry Reid's or anyone else's value system?
I have no idea. And I was thinking to myself, when Jennifer gets into work, I'm going to ask her that.
That's Jennifer Steinhauer, your colleague who wrote
right.
that article. Right. And maybe she can tell you, does the shooting range get cut 8% by the sequester?
Yes.
It seems a little like post-Newtown gun legislation is now struggling in Congress, not just the assault weapons or even the extended magazine ban, but even the expanded background checks. Here is Republican Senator Lindsey Graham of South Carolina on CNN State of the Union yesterday morning. He is asking, why require more people to submit to background checks when the checks today don't catch everyone?
I have legislation with Senator Pryor and Begich, two Democrats, myself and Jeff Flake, that would change the federal system. There was a lady who pled not guilty by reason of insanity in 2005 in South Carolina of trying to kill President Bush. February of this year, she went and bought a gun. And that adjudication was not in the system. She was able to purchase a gun, went to school, and thank God the gun did not discharge. She's being held for attempted murder, but the four of us have a bill to redefine mental health adjudications to make sure a situation like hers gets into the system.
Senator Lindsey Graham on CNN, Jackie Combs, New York Times national correspondent, our guest. Is Senator Graham typical of Senate Republicans on background checks at this point, or even a broader coalition since he mentioned a bipartisan bill?
Well, it's hard to tell in lieu of a vote. I mean, pre-Newtown, I would have said, no, he's not typical at all. that there would be a lot of opposition to background checks. But it is one, you know, there's a tension in the news today about the shooter in Aurora who killed 12 people in a movie theater. And, you know, that was horrific enough, and it seized the nation's attention for a while, but not nearly to the extent that Newtown did for, you know, obvious reasons. And it just has changed everything. I still think that there will be legislation this year. Because if you just think ahead to mid-December, if the first anniversary of the Newtown shootings comes along and all the attention is on the fact that there's no new gun law, it's hard to imagine there wouldn't be some sort of backlash. But at the same time, that's not to say it's going to be either easy or that the final legislation will be something that people who would like to see tougher restrictions would like. I think, you know, there's a lot of attention been paid to the assault weapons ban not being part of the underlying package that will come to the Senate floor. In part, you've mentioned Harry Reid. That's his decision. But it was a very practical, political, tactical decision because it wouldn't have enough votes. There's enough Democrats who would join Republicans to vote against it. But a lot of the people in the, you know, who want more gun safety, gun control provisions are saying, you know, that's not really necessary to a tough bill. It's this background checks issue that is really the most important part.
And I'm not sure I understand the logic there, and maybe you can explain what that bill was, that bipartisan bill that he was referring to about adjudicating mental health cases differently. But on the logic, the background checks we have are 2 weeks. He
right.
says, so Congress should avoid strengthening them. I mean, honestly, it's double talk to my ears, but is Graham proposing anything that would actually make the existing background checks more effective? Because the NRA generally fights that, too.
Well, it's hard to say. The legislation that came out of the Senate committee will now go to the floor. There'll be attempts to strengthen it. It's, it really is one of those that the I've seen many times in Congress where they will take credit for passing a bill that does X, but, you know, it's really in the details whether it truly does X once it gets into, the real world, and if whether there are so many loopholes that it's ineffective. And you know, that's basically the way the background check laws are now. There's huge, huge, you know, the gun show loophole being maybe the biggest. But
let me jump in on that point and
yes.
play another clip of Lindsey Graham on CNN with Candace Crowley yesterday saying basically that the bill now for background checks under consideration would actually make the checks too tight.
Well, if you ask the question, should a father have to do a background check when they give their son a gun for Christmas?
But this is a little different. This is about just if you
necessary.
Go to a gun show.
Well, no, that's what the bill does. The bill requires private individual transfers to go through the federal system. The current system is broken. I hope most Americans understand that 80,000 people last year failed a background check and only 66 got prosecuted. Why in the world would you expand that system if you're not enforcing the law that exists today to include private transfers?
So Jackie Combs, my guest, national correspondent for the New York Times, do you know those numbers that he talked about? So few people got prosecuted for anything after failing a background check. I don't know that failing a background check for a gun purchase means you broke a law,
right.
but maybe that's a lot of what they are coming up
yeah.
with, that people have felonies or, you know, are violating their parole or one thing or another.
Well, that statistic of his doesn't really mean a lot, because the more meaningful statistic is how many people were prevented from being sold a gun because it was found out that they had a, something in their background, criminal or mental health-wise, that would preclude them from legally being able to own one. And so that's the number that's more important.
That is a pretty interesting number. And he said it, 80,000 people last year failed a background check. That's
right.
80,000 people who were officially deemed a threat who were prevented from buying a firearm.
Right. Whether those people are prosecuted is not all that important. It's just whether they were prevented from getting a
right.
gun. And, you know, but clearly we know from, you know, real life that plenty of people who shouldn't be sold a gun are getting sold firearms. And certainly, and you know, this he mentioned the family, you know, whether or not they're going to have to regulate family purchases or family, you know, exchanges of firearms. And so, you know, I think they worked that out at the committee level. There'll probably be further attempts on the floor to address that. But, you know, it could be, it's one of those things that can sound like it's not a big deal, but depending on how the language on that is, you could have a loophole that would allow people to, a family loophole that would allow guns to get through to people that we are intending to keep them from.
Right. I've said on the show before that I wonder if they have that in-house loophole, depending on if it's defined by the place, a gun in your home, or a gun to an immediate family member, whether there's going to wind up being a lot of sort of Tupperware parties for gun sales, just slightly different from the gun shows that we have now. And on the family transfers, there was that cache of stuff from Adam Lanza.
Right.
That was revealed last week. And
right.
As the Times article on that described it, it included a safe with some money that his mother gave him, apparently intended to buy a gun.
Right.
So if, you know, Adam Lanza could have gotten a gun, now that was money, but if he could have gotten a gun given to him by his mother, who he then wound up turning around and murdering, without him having to get screened, you know, maybe that's something that should be in the bill.
Absolutely.
So, all right, let's change the topic on that note to immigration. Also big news over Easter weekend, there were reports of a deal among the so-called bipartisan Gang of Eight in the Senate, which really stemmed from business and labor lobbyists agreeing on a guest worker program. Lindsey Graham is a member of the Gang of Eight, too, and was asked on CNN if such a bill could pass the more conservative House of Representatives.
Yes, I believe it will pass the House because it secures our borders. It controls who gets a job. As to the 11 million, they'll have a pathway to citizenship, but it will be earned, it will be long, and it will be hard, and I think it is fair. And the main thing, the combination of events in this bill will prevent a third wave of illegal immigration and replace a broken immigration with a merit-based, economic-based system to help grow our economy in the future. I think it will pass both houses. We're going to need the president's support. And I'm proud of the work product, and I look forward to rolling it out.
Okay. Lindsey Graham on CNN. Brian Lehrer with you on WNYC with Jackie Combs, national correspondent for the New York Times, as we talk some Monday morning politics for my first segment back from vacation. And hello, everybody. Good to be back if you're just joining us. Jackie, is there a deal or is there not a deal? Marco Rubio issued a statement timed for the Sunday morning talk shows that said talk of a deal is premature. Is there a hitch or is Rubio just making sure he's in the headlines on this bill every step of the way?
Yeah. Well, the latter is probably true, regardless of the answer to the former. But I think there's actually two things in question here. One was there is a deal apparently between union leaders and the Chamber of Commerce, which had been at odds over the question of what sort of guest worker program should be set up as part of comprehensive immigration law. That is, you know, how many guest workers should be allowed in the country to do jobs, say, in the fields and in factories that, you know, that employers cannot find enough Americans to do the job. And once you decide on the number, the Chamber of Commerce wanted 400,000. At one point, the unions wanted 20,000. So you see there's a big gap there. They've ultimately decided tentatively on a phased-in increase that would max out at 200,000. And the second question they had to address was how much would those people be paid? And, you know, because the union leaders obviously didn't want people to be allowed to come in and be paid so little that, or these jobs to pay so little that, of course, Americans wouldn't want them. And then foreigners would come in.
Drive down wages for everybody.
Exactly. And so they settled that question as well. The second issue for, you know, to get at Mr. your question as to whether is there a deal or is there not a deal. So you have labor and business having tentatively agreed to this question. If they hadn't been able to agree, the so-called Gang of Eight, the politicians would not have gone forward with legislation with labor and big business at odds. So they've settled that now. Tentatively, the Gang of Eight has a deal. But, you know, Senator Rubio is right that, you know, until all the language, there's an old saying in legislating and on Capitol Hill that nothing's settled till everything's settled. And it gives people an out if, you know, language comes together and it's not what they thought, or, frankly, if the trial balloon got shot down on an issue, it gives them an out. They can seize on some language that says and say, this isn't what I intended, I'm getting out. Rubio is a real, you know, his fellow, the other seven members of the Gang of Eight are watching him warily because his own personal politics are so caught up, as are Lindsey Graham's, for that matter. I mean, for Marco Rubio, it's presidential politics in 2016 that he's worried about and not getting too far ahead of the Republican base, which isn't exactly thrilled about doing a liberalized immigration law. For Lindsey Graham, it's the fact that he's up for re-election in 2014. So you've showed both in the gun control debate and by your clip on immigration that Lindsey Graham is trying, you know, you could say trying to have it both ways.
Right.
He's an ultimate legislator. This guy really likes to legislate. So he wants to be part of the game. You see, he's in both games, gun control and immigration. But at the same time, that's why it sounds like he's trying to have it both ways, being critical while at the same time working towards an end, because he wants to do it, but he knows he needs to give himself an out so where he sounds to his conservative base like he's driving a hard bargain.
Yeah, that's really interesting. And Rubio, as you say, trying to play both sides of the fence, both appealing to his Tea Party base as he tries to build a presidential candidacy, presumably for 2016, and at the same time leading the liberalization of the immigration laws so the Republican Party can modernize, and can he walk that line and also not fall too far behind Rand Paul in how many high-profile things that he does. Can I just ask you one thing about the guest worker program, because it's really complicated?
Yeah.
And again, reading from the Times the other day, the number of guest workers allowed in would increase as the nation's unemployment rate fell and the number of job openings increased. So there's already two metrics that they have to pay attention to, the unemployment rate and the number of job openings in specified fields.
Right.
Then the government's going to somehow come up with a number of allowed guest workers on that. A federal commission would be set up to also assess the need for guest workers with an eye to shortages in specific industries and communities. And then the two sides agree that guest workers would be paid the prevailing industry wage, which would need to be established, some number that the government would then say how much guest workers in each individual industry could be paid, I guess.
Right.
And then there's a safety valve exemption to bring in workers, but with additional administrative hurdles and at a higher wage rate than the prevailing wage, oh my goodness, if there were still openings in certain fields. So, I mean, that has a lot of government involvement in selected industries.
Right. And that's, you know, the nature of compromise. I mean, people complain about government regulation all the time. Well, as you've just given an example, a lot of government regulations are the result of what compromise were struck. So you have all these various provisions in there because they're either demanded by, you know, the protagonists in the unions or those in big business. And so, you know, but and it is complicated and be administered, you know, by officials, state and federal officials at the local level for the most part.
Do you know which industries would mostly be covered by that?
Well, there's some exemptions for construction industry, but it's I haven't seen the final language, but certainly it's going to be applicable to, you know, the businesses that, you know, we all know of as being those that are most used Latino workers, and, you know, landscaping, retail, fast food services, restaurants. So it's the National Retail Association, the Restaurant Association, they are very much involved. The construction workers union in particular, because they worry, you know, construction jobs, when they're available, pay pretty well. And so they don't want the, you know, construction industry to be flooded with guest workers
who would take
a lower wage and drive them down for everything.
A lot of implication for New York, it sounds like there.
But, you know, we do have experience with guest worker programs, and it's not all good, certainly. But I so 35 years ago, took my first journalism job in Texas, and I lived there for 5 years. And guest worker programs were very controversial because of the alleged and actual abuse of the people coming in. My own brothers, who had also moved to Texas to be in the construction industry, told me anecdotes of Latinos, Mexicans who had come for jobs in the Houston area where there was a construction boom, and they would use the unskilled labor or semi-skilled labor for whatever job they needed. And literally, my brothers saw this on payday, when people lined up for their pay, they were laughed at.
And so they're like second-class residents because they're here to be guest workers, but they don't have the rights of citizenship. But I think I read that these guest workers would then be allowed to apply for permanent residency after 1 year. Is that correct?
I'm not sure about that.
So we'll
there's variables depending on the industry.
Right. So there's going to be an immigration group issue to deal with, too, about whether there are sufficient human rights and civil rights for guest workers. Last thing I want to throw in before we run out of time that I don't get from something I saw on TV yesterday, which was New York's Senator Chuck Schumer, his reference to some kind of secret metrics for declaring that the Mexican border is secure. Here is Senator Schumer, also a Gang of Eight member, on NBC's Meet the Press.
We've come to a basic agreement, which is that first people will be legalized, in other words, not citizens, but they'll be allowed to work, come out of the shadows, travel. Then we will make sure the border is secure. And we have specific metrics that are in the bill, I'm not going to get into what they are, to make sure that that happens. And after that happens, there's a path to citizenship.
After that happens, there's a path to citizenship.
Right.
And I saw some patter on social media yesterday afternoon after he said that. Oh, Chuck Schumer's secret metrics. He won't tell us when they would declare the border secure. What's that about?
Well, I think it's mostly about the fact they haven't settled on them yet. They're secret to everyone.
Because they're negotiating them behind closed doors.
Right, exactly. And, it's a difficult thing, but there's no question that the border security has been enhanced during the Obama administration to the extent, and more money spent on it pre-sequestration than just about any time in history, and illegal immigration is down. Now, granted, a part of that, probably a good part of that, is due to the fact that there's been a downturn in the economy, and, you know, there haven't been as many jobs available here, which has depressed immigration in this direction, illegal.
Yeah.
So, but what the metrics are, I don't know yet, and I don't think Chuck Schumer knows all of them yet.
All right. And
but they're also, they're not ready to release them yet because to the extent things get shut, until the eight have agreement among themselves, they don't want to release these details.
Jackie Combs, national correspondent for the New York Times. And boy, while most Americans were off eating marshmallow peeps and matzah, depending on their bent, over the weekend, they were having a very busy Washington weekend in Washington, even on recess, on immigration.
Exactly.
And on guns. So thank you for filling us in on all that. Great job. I really appreciate it.
My pleasure.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Coming up next, winners and losers in New York State's new budget. Today is the beginning of the New York State fiscal year, another holiday to celebrate, along with April Fool's Day and day after Easter and opening day of the baseball season. Woohoo! It's the beginning of fiscal year in New York State. And we've got a list of which lobbying groups spent the most to lobby Albany over the last few months and what they got for their money. Stay with us.